Hi, everybody, and welcome to Two of the First, presented by French Lick Resort. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Great to have you here today on the Golf News Net. We've got a podcast for you coming now each and every day, 10 to 15 minutes or so, just the biggest headlines in the game that for that day, with some analysis, a little bit of humor, and just a general good time to get you caught up in the world of golf pretty quickly each and every morning. Today, we obviously have two topics for you, as the show implies. One's obviously dominating the headlines a little bit more than the other, and that's LIV. And then we'll get into the implications of LIV for the President's Cup. And we'll talk about that in kind of the second half of things. But as many of you know, if you've kind of been following this thing, and if you haven't been, I'm kind of surprised because it's been a headline dominator in golf media circles, but six players officially were announced by LIV as having signed to play the LIV Golf Invitational Series starting this week in what they're calling Boston, which is actually in Bolton, Massachusetts, which is about 2 hours away. But nevertheless, we'll call it marketing. But the six players are the worst-kept secret in golf, Cam Smith, who we kind of knew was leaving as rumors started to percolate around the Open Championship, even before his epic final round 64 to win the tournament. And then obviously the press conference after winning, where he was asked about the rumor, and then said, oh, you know, not now, I just won the Open, which I think only furthers the tradition or further cements the rule that if you're asked about LIV and then you get indignant about it, you are absolutely leaving for LIV. There is 100% chance, and there's been a 100% correlation to that. Brooks Koepka was probably the first case of that. Now we've got Cam Smith to further reiterate that, but Cam's gone. Rumored $100 million deal, although one of the other names, the next big name, I guess, in terms of official World Golf ranking is Joaquin Niemann, who is also reported by The Telegraph and James Corrigan, who's been all over this story from really the beginning, saying that Niemann also signed for $100 million. And that really intrigues me because Joaquin Niemann is, yes, the Chilean number one, but he is not a major champion. He's a winner on the PGA Tour, of course. He won this year at the Genesis Invitational Tigers event, which, I mean, I guess there's some value to Greg Norman that kind of stick it in the eye of Tiger Woods a little bit. But other than that, I mean, he's not anywhere near on the same level right now as Cam Smith, but we'll come back to that. And then you've got four, not as big of a deal names, but four names that do mean something to golf fans. You've got Harold Varner III, who reportedly left for somewhere in the area of $40 to $50 million. You've got Mark Leishman, longtime PGA Tour player, multi-time winner, multi-time major contender, probably could have won a Masters, could have won an Open. I mean, he was in the playoff for the 2015 Open. So you've got those guys. And then you've got Anirban Lahiri, who is India's top-ranked player, which, again, Norman trying to kind of think about maybe creating a line of demarcation as the PGA Tour being the American Tour and LIV maybe being the more global tour or something like that. But they went after Lahiri, and Lahiri signed. Obviously, Lahiri has typically had very unstable PGA Tour status, so it makes kind of a lot of sense for a guy like that who finished second in the Players' Championship, and then has subsequently gone on to done just about nothing. So for him, that's an easy opportunity for him to say yes, get some guaranteed money, and then see where things leave at the end of his contract. And then the last name, and maybe not least, but certainly least in terms of wins, is Cam Tringali, who posted a very kind of strangely worded word salad of a note on Twitter over the weekend when it was clear he was going to leave. And it kind of read a lot like a daddy's got to leave for a while letter. Like, oh, I've had a great time on the PGA Tour, but I've got to go now to LIV Golf, and I have to go away. And I'll see you soon. Thanks for the memories. Thanks for everything. Oh, you're going to be special. Don't worry about it, sport. Mom's going to take good care of you, kind of thing. Very strange wording to it. And you might want to kind of contrast that with Harold Varner III's letter, which came out yesterday, which came out on fancier letterhead and had his logo on it. And on one hand, I guess a lot of people have given him credit because he said, look, I've come from a background of very little means And now I have an opportunity singularly with this live offer to secure my financial future, my family's financial future, generations of Varner's financial future. And so I'm just going to take the deal. And hopefully that means for me that you may not like what I've done, but you'll understand it. And that hopefully I can use that money to not only further myself, but also make investments through his foundation in golf and in other people. And that has generated a whole lot of kudos and props and respect and all kinds of different kind of almost borderline tribute posts to Harold Varner III, who is, by the way, the defending champion of the Saudi International and is going to fall to the top 50 in the world pretty quickly once he stops earning any kind of points in the official World Golf Ranking. But I think that we kind of have set the bar so low now, and we have gone from just admit that it's the money from the first press conferences in London, where you kind of just go to the first crop of players who are like, can you not answer why you are involved with an organization that is funded exclusively by the Saudi government with the express purpose of both developing their national business interests, but also with the not so express purpose, although it's pretty evident, of trying to improve their reputation around the world. And the players did a very poor job of kind of answering it then. So we've kind of just gone from that higher standard of trying to answer the larger questions to just accepting, admitting it's all about the money is now a good bar. I mean, that's the lowest bar possible, is to say, yep, they're paying me a boatload of cash and I don't really care about the implications of it. And I'm not going to answer, and then to go, oh, well, you don't have to answer the questions. You don't have to answer the harder questions because you just said it's all about the money. And that, I feel like, is maybe Liv starting to be normalized to a degree. And I don't know that it's necessarily a good thing, but it is a thing. And I feel like Harold Varner III is probably one of those more intriguing cases because so many of the players that have left, we've perceived them to be of massive wealth and have come from a great background and amassed so much money over the years in their professional career. So they were already wealthy. They're getting wealthier. And obviously Harold Varner III is very transparent about his life story, about where he came from, where he grew up, what he's been through to get to this stage. And he's not that guy. He's just not. And so I think that makes this case a little bit more emotional, a little bit more difficult to kind of be critical of HV3, just because so many of us have been in that position, have grown up with modest or not many means, or maybe above average means, but not stratospheric means, and thought to ourselves, you know, if the Saudis came to us tomorrow with an exorbitant amount of money above and beyond what we were making today, would you take that? Not to necessarily say, okay, well, if they offer me $50 million to do my current job, would I take it? But would they offer me 10 times what I'm earning or 15 times what I'm earning? Would I take it to work for them? And I think that's, again, in part the normalization of live to a degree and kind of a... And I've had this conversation with other people in golf and just other people. I keep saying this over and over. I get it. Doesn't mean I like it, but I get it. And I think that leaves us in a place where you again, just kind of have to accept it is what it is. And then you go from there. And so you've got this group of six guys who are going to make their first start this week. Notable that really two guys in particular who didn't sign that were rumored to be signing, which is Hideki Matsuyama, who didn't sign. And he turned down what reportedly was kind of even bananas money. I mean, just bonkers, inconceivable amounts of money, well north of $100 million. Some numbers have been thrown out there, $300, $400 million. I don't know if it was that high. I guess the only people who ever really truly know are Hideki, his agent, and the Live people. But he didn't sign. And then Cam Young stayed. And Cam Young said at the Tour Championship, the meeting that they had in Delaware, head of the BMW with all the top players, talking about the changes, how they're going to organize, how they're going to kind of support one another, was a big factor in that. And I think the Neiman case is really interesting as well, because there was a lot of background drama on Monday about whether he had signed or not, whether he had joined Liv, and his agent put it out there through Doug Ferguson, the AP, that he hadn't. But I had heard chatter that he already had. And so that since he already had, perhaps he had cold feet. Maybe it hurt him. He was in the meeting in Delaware. So he probably heard a lot of the details and thought, you know, maybe I don't want to do this. But he was already locked in at that point and didn't really have much of a choice. So I think at that point that's kind of where it was. But there is the distinct possibility that it was a last minute thing, that, you know, maybe he was in earlier and then was out. And then they sweetened it even more to get to this reported $100 million figure from James Corrigan and the Telegraph. So I think this is kind of the last wave of major signings for a while. I mean, we get these kind of after or before each Liv event of, oh, well, we've signed three players or four players or now six players or whatever. I think they're kind of running out of two things. One, reasons for guys to leave in waves. And two, spots. The first part is, so many players waited until after the Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup because they could collect the money. And at least they believe they can collect the money under the PGA Tour bylaws. Now, we'll figure out. That could be a whole other thing. We might get to that another day. That could be a legal issue. But you have to play in half of the eight events under the Liv structure for this year to be able to qualify for the $50 million boondoggle at Trump Doral at the end of their season. So that was kind of a marker post. Okay, well, you need to start in this event if you want to try to get to those events, get to that end. And then you've got the President's Cup out there, which we'll get to in a second. I guess it's another marker post because there were rumors that Mito Pereira was going to join Liv, and he didn't sign yet. It's not evident that he is going to sign imminently, but he obviously did post on social media that he's really excited about playing in the President's Cup, representing the international team. So will he play in that and then bolt? I don't know. I mean, I guess that's a potential rumor out there. But the other limiting factor here now is how many spots they've got left. They kicked out eight guys from the previous event and in New Jersey at Trump's place in Bedminster. And now they've got this one. They've got eight out of the way. Obviously, the six new signees, a couple guys coming in and out from the European Tour or from elsewhere, from the Asian Tour, earning their way in. And so if you look at the roster of 48 players that they have for this tournament, I don't think you have that many more you can swap out for next season. Three, four, because they got to keep some spots open for players based on the International Series and the Asian Tour order of merit. So they need some spots remaining. You can't have 48 guys all signed. You need like 44 or 45 guys for that to work. So there really just aren't that many spots left. And are they going to sign more than 48 players? They may have already. We don't know that for certain. But in that case, then you're basically paying a whole bunch of guys above and beyond 48 to just sit around and do nothing. And they seem perfectly happy doing that, I suppose, 120K at a time. But that's going to add up over time. So you really don't want that many players under contract if you're paying big money for them for multi-year deals. So I just don't think we're going to see more waves like this for the rest of the year. Next milepost is December, when we kind of find out if anyone makes a year-end move, if there's anything from the major championships. I think any signings from here on out are kind of one-offs, and they would be big deals. They would not be kind of the smaller deals, so to speak, which $50 million is not a small deal, but relatively speaking, is a small deal. So that's kind of the lineup moving forward. And now they've got this space here with the Massachusetts event. They've got one, which they call in Chicago. Rich Harvest Farms, not Chicago, but that's the next one. And then you get into the two international events, one in Saudi Arabia, one in Thailand, not Singapore. And then you've got the event that closes out the season in Trump Doral. So kind of their time to shine a little bit. And I guess we'll see if some of these signings net any more YouTube viewers or inspires any interest whatsoever in striking a TV deal when there's really only one major network in this country, Fox, that could sign with them given the entanglements the others have with the PGA Tour. And that network, by the way, just got smoked when they had that USGA contract and probably aren't really interested in losing money anytime soon to golf to an audience that has not been demonstrated yet. So hold off on that. Let's shift quickly over to the President's Cup, at least give it a due few minutes. before we wrap up this first episode of Two Off the First. So obviously several names that were going to be on the President's Cup team are gone. Cam Smith is obviously the top of the heap. And you've got Joaquin Niemann. You can make the argument that Trevor Immelman would have considered putting Mark Leishman on the team. Maybe he wouldn't have. We don't know that for sure. If Mito leaves, I guess, some point before the President's Cup, obviously that would be a third addition to that list of depletions. You've lost all the South African guys, all those guys that left right away who had no issues going to live. So at this point, you've kind of got a mixture of Asian-born players. You've got Adeki right at the top of that list, right? And then you kind of go from there, and you've got to fill in some gaps. And Trevor Immelman's going to do it. He's got a plan. I'm sure he has had contingencies for this the entire time. He's thought, if so-and-so leaves, here's who I'm interested in, either with captain's picks or however that's going to be modified now, based off of losing so many top-ranked guys to live that could have qualified for the international team. So that's going to be the challenge. And we're going to have a President's Cup in a few weeks that's going to feel really weird because all of the American players that are 30 and under, basically, are on this team. I mean, Brooks is older now. He's above 30, and DJ's in his late 30s, similar age to me. So you're really not losing, or really haven't lost much to live. And you've got to pair those guys, this behemoth team, against a team that's largely been depleted of eligible players because of what has happened. And I don't know that that's good. I mean, it could be awful. It could be embarrassing. And I think there's probably an expectation now that it's going to be embarrassing, that it could end on Saturday, that it could be decided on Saturday, like it almost was at Liberty National 5 years ago. And that, in a way, could be the death knell for the series, at least as we understand it. I don't think the President's Cup is going anywhere. The PGA Tour signed contracts. They've got deals in place. They've got sponsors in place. But as I've said before, and I will continue to say, I think the President's Cup would be a whole lot healthier if it were a mixed event. If it were six men, six women competing in these events together. And you could have it set up with a unique format where you had a slate of six matches every day, where you couldn't hide anybody, where you had to have everyone in play, where you could make some matches men and women together in teams, where you could have just women versus just women, just men versus just men, do a whole bunch of different ways. You could set up Sunday singles that could be fascinating, where you had two sets of tees. Could you imagine having like Jin Young Ko against Patrick Cantlay from different sets of tees in match play? Or I guess if you wanted to set it up this way, you could have men versus men and women versus women. But I think you could create a whole series of fascinating matchups. Women's golf is huge in Asia. It is growing in this country by the year. It would elevate women's golf in this country to a whole other stage, even though the Solheim Cup is amazing and well-watched and well-attended. This puts it on another level in front of an audience that maybe wouldn't consider watching women's golf. Meanwhile, you almost basically even out the sides overnight because of the way that you're changing the participation in it to kind of favor the international players. It just, it all makes all the sense in the world. And I have no idea if there's any kind of chatter about that, given what's happened with LIV. Obviously, it's not going to happen this time around. And Trevor Immelman is kind of the unfortunate, the bearer of bad news, the brunt of all of this. But I have a feeling maybe some things are starting to change. Maybe some conversations are starting to be had that maybe moving forward, this President's Cup needs to have a different look and feel to it. And that could be nothing but good for the President's Cup. All right, that's going to do it for us on this edition of Two Off the First. I know we went over our stated time goals for the first episode, and hey, there's a lot to cover on this LIV topic, so we went closer to 20 minutes. So thank you for giving us a listen. I really appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow with two more stories, two more topics for you on Two Off the First. Please subscribe to the show, whether it's through iTunes, Spotify, or whatever service you like. Please give us a 5-star review if you're willing to do that. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Ryan Ballingy. Or if you want to follow Golf News Net on your favorite social media service, the handle is Golf News Net. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow.